Welcome back, you degenerate listeners, to the next installment of the Winning Our Wagers podcast. I am your host, Joe, and with me today is nobody. Literally all alone. Yep. Unfortunately, no, my co-host Ryan was unable to join me. So as we sit here today, it is April 24th. The NFL draft starts tomorrow, and we were unable to figure out a time to get together. Sick kids, busy life, busy wife, all that fun stuff. So, yep, unfortunately going it alone, but that's okay. I did get his blessing to do this. So, as we know on last episode, basically, we were recapping the year in fantasy football 2023 for the AFC. And the whole reason behind this was that, you know, things change in the offseason. You kind of forget, you know, what your thought was on a player, and then you end up looking back and you're like, yeah, maybe I liked him, maybe I didn't. So I think it's important to kind of mark down, you know, who we liked and why, and then see if we were right or wrong, so that year to year we can kind of create ideas on new players based on what has previously happened. Of course, this is just one of the pieces of the puzzle. It's not the end-all be-all. NFL draft is tomorrow. Probably won't do anything after that, but I did want to get this done before the new NFL season turns the page, and I forget everything that I thought about prior to last season, even though I probably already forgot a good deal. But without further ado, I guess we'll dive into it. And, of course, I got a good old-fashioned Busch Latte. Figure I went old school. I think I've had craft beer or whiskey basically every episode. So, all righty, starting with the NFC East, we have the Dallas Cowboys finished the season at 12-5, 5-1 inside the division. Prior to the season, you know, Cowboys are perpetually a talented team. I think with 12 wins, they did exceed my expectations a little bit. I feel like they're always between the 9 and 11 win range, especially because we weren't sure what the offense kind of looked like. The offensive line seemed like it was beaten down compared to years prior. No Ezekiel Elliott, so kind of unsure how the offense would look. But, of course, they came out and they were actually red hot. So, offensively, they were actually a very good unit. We had Dak Prescott leading the way at quarterback. You know, going into the season, I really didn't want anything to do with Dak. He's always been someone who produces, but nothing special. I mean, I know a few years ago he was red hot, but he hasn't been running due to that leg injury he suffered a few years ago. I think it was a fractured fibula or tibia, lower leg fracture that he just really never recovered from rushing-wise. So we're looking in the age of quarterbacks where, you know, no rushing ability, it kind of limits what they can do. Turns out at the end of the season he did finish fourth in fantasy points, so of course that kind of turned on its ugly head. But, you know, this team literally just threw the ball all over the place, and Dak kind of benefited from that. Backup quarterback was Trey Lance, and you know, one of the funniest trades, obviously we know the 49ers traded up to acquire him multiple first-round picks, and he was traded for like a slew of fourth, fifth, sixth-round picks or whatever it ended up being. Not even a slew of picks. I think it was just a couple. At any rate, QB at in Dallas is pretty good. Kind of surprised with the departure of Alan Moore as the offensive coordinator. But I guess this is the new look Cowboys. This is what they're going to do. They're going to throw the ball up and down the field. I can't say it's going to change much next year, but obviously we still got a lot to go. I can't really say, you know, obviously it didn't help out that I didn't have Dak across the board. I think he was drafted, you know, as a back end like QB1 and obviously put up elite QB1 numbers, but I don't know. I don't think I can invest a top four QB pick in him. I think he's more of a, you know, QB 6 to 10 type guy. I'd be much more comfortable there. We'll see kind of where he goes next season. At running back, this was Tony Pollard's first year to shine, and he was a dullard. I don't remember exactly where he went in drafts last year. I do know that I think it was second, third round guy, and I was not in on Tony Pollard at all. He's a small, diminutive guy. Didn't think he'd be able to handle the every down work, and he didn't. He was unable to replicate numbers that he had, even with splitting time with Ezekiel Elliott the year before. You know, ultimately, I think he was a big bust for anyone who did take him. I'm trying to see even where he finished right now in running back, and I know it's not top 10. Of course, they don't help me out with numbers here, and it kind of changed the season, too. I don't know where he's at, but he's down here. Let's see. Behind Jerome Ford. So we're talking about, like, running back at least 12, 15 era, and I know he was above that. So, you know, not great, and especially in the RB landscape. If you fall even a number, like a handful, 5, 10 picks, based on where your draft status was, that point total sinks like a rock. So not someone I'm going to be looking to invest in much next year. You know, of course, we know running back for the Dallas Cowboys is a fantasy boon, but I don't know what it's going to look like. Rico Dowdle and Deuce Vaughn were the backups. They were complete zeros. So nothing really in the running back pool outside of Pollard. I think it's something they will address tomorrow in the draft. Probably not tomorrow, but over the weekend. Wide receiver, we have C.D. Lamb. Your, according to my league, number one scoring wide receiver. Yep, he had half a point per game average, less than Tyreek Hill, but did have 14 more points due to Tyreek Hill missing some points late. C.D. Lamb was an absolute beast. You know, first few games of the season, he was solid. I mean, it wasn't anything absolutely spectacular. 9, 21, 8, 12, 6, 17, week 6, bye week 7. After that, double digits every single week. His lowest point total was 13. He had 15 or more every single week but one. He had 20 or more points well over half those weeks. He was an absolute phenom, and he could not be stopped. 9 targets every single week. It was insane. They got him the ball. There was no one else really there. Brandon Cooks and his coconut head. Michael Gallup, who's now departed. You know, there really wasn't much available outside of CeeDee Lamb. And, you know, I don't really see much changing. Is he worth being the first overall pick? No. Is he worth a top five pick? I don't see how you can argue anything different. So right now, CeeDee Lamb, I think he has to be a top five pick across the board and basically all formats, especially considering the other wide receivers are finished around him. You know, he's one of the more likely to stay up there. He's young. He's a great talent. You know, is his ceiling even higher than where it was this year? It's hard to say yes, but, you know, it's also hard to say that he can't improve being, I don't know, all of 23 years old, 24 years old he is. I don't. Of course, ESPN doesn't have that, but I guess it doesn't really matter. I do know he's young and still ascending. Other wide receivers here, as I kind of mentioned, nothing. Unless they make a change, it's not worthwhile. And then we have at the tight end position, we have Jake Ferguson. He was someone that I think people were investing in at the tight end position. And, of course, as I mentioned, ESPN turned over the league. So, unfortunately, I cannot pull up tight end specifically here. And every other league is closed. So, I just know Ferguson, nothing specific. You know, he was in that dead pool of tight ends. He wasn't in the top five, and it was just the blah after that. So, he's someone, if you don't have to draft as a top five tight end and you can get, you know, tight end 6 to 10 or 12 production from him, you know, that's just a guy. I don't think it does anything special for you. One could argue that he's going to get more usage next year as he kind of ages into this role a little bit better, but nothing specific to me. I don't think he's anyone, you know, fantastic, no one to really write home about. Next up, we have the Philadelphia Eagles finishing at 11-6, 4-2 within the division. You know, this was a team that came out hot as blazes and fell apart. I think they lost like 5 of the last 6 games or something just ridiculous. Part of it, Jalen Hurts had some struggles. I know he threw a lot more interceptions slash fumbled the ball a lot more than he had in the past. You know, passing touchdowns were down, but, you know, the tush push thing everyone talked about all season long, he could not be stopped. I do know that at the end of the season that Jason Kelce retired, their offensive lineman, the center, kind of the quarterback of that offensive line group. I think a big part of it was that, and I think we'll see that next season. So, you know, Jalen Hurts did finish as a number 2 fantasy quarterback. We saw some injuries kind of happen. I think this is now the second year in a row he was hurt late. I'm going to be a little bit trepidatious taking him as a top 3 quarterback. As we know, it might invest, might cost a high pick, you know, a second, maybe even a third round pick in that. To acquire him, and I don't know if I can do it. Another young guy, Clock and I were talking about the other day. You know, he was a guy we did not believe in. I think we were literally on this airwaves on record saying he wasn't the guy we liked, but we gave the Eagles credit because they built around him, and they built a great offense there. You know, it sucked what happened at the end of last season. They were an absolute just mess in the playoffs. I think they have a good core. I think they're going to be able to turn around next year. However, you know, I think we have seen the apex of Jalen Hurts. I don't know if he can really improve on it, but, you know, he was the second highest scoring fantasy quarterback last year, according to team quarterbacks. Number 2 behind the Bills quarterback, the number 1 scoring player in fantasy. So, you know, I don't even know if that's necessarily a bad thing. However, I'm not spending that draft capital. If he's like the 4th or 5th quarterback off the board, or I can get him at a, you know, fourth round pick or something I'm comfortable with, fine, but I don't know. Especially if it's not team quarterback, I'm going to be a little concerned. He was backed up by Marcus Mariota and made no impact whatsoever. At running back, we had DeAndre Swift. I strongly remember DeAndre Swift being, quick side note, Jalen Hurts was drafted as a top 3 quarterback. My feeling between the 3, Bills, Eagles, and KC, Chiefs quarterback, team QB in my league is how we do it. I liked the Bills of those top three, and I actually took them that way in a few. So I think it probably Bills and Eagles should be around top three again next year. But anyway, beside that point, DeAndre Swift was around a fifth-round pick. He was in that core of running backs that I was comfortable with taking as my second or third running back. I loved the system for him. I thought he would be used pretty heavily. But I was also a little cautious. I wasn't going to take him in the third or anything. I thought fourth, maybe fifth was a good pick for him. You know, as a running back too, reason being, he wasn't going to score touchdowns. And, you know, I didn't think the tush push would be as, you know, incredible as it was this year, but everyone knows with a rushing quarterback, it drops your rushing numbers. He did make up for it, and he started out the season pretty good. Hilariously enough, somehow the hype got out there that Rashad Penny was going to be the starting running back, or I think it was him over Gainwell or something. I don't know, someone up there. I think it was Kenneth Gainwell, actually. Caught some steam and started game one. And they were Thursday Night Football week two, and DeAndre Swift was immediately the starter and never let go of the reins after that. So it was hilarious to see Swift drop like an absolute rock as the season really approached, and did not take the bait, so happy about that. But as we know, Eagles, even though, the head coach, Doug Peterson, has left, they still have maintained a running back by committee. And that's not something I love to invest in. I knew Swift would be the alpha, and Gainwell, Boston Scott, Rashad Penny would kind of just fall the wayside. You know, I know there's already been moves, and this is not the point of the podcast. I know Swift is already with Chicago, but, you know, with Saquon Barkley there, maybe he's that guy. I can't trust his health, but, you know, I'm not going to invest deep in this backfield. And even though Saquon's injury prone, I don't know if I'm going to take darts on Gainwell, Scott, or whoever else is still there. Running back wise, I do know none of those guys finished incredibly high outside of Swift. He was really the only meaningful guy, and I'm trying to do a quick scroll here and not take way too much time. He ended up finishing, it looks like, running back 12, 15, around 20. So, I mean, still a viable guy. I mean, you didn't use him like crazy every single week. Especially toward the end of the season after the bye, he had one game of 18, one of 15. Those are the only double digits, you know, but the first 9 weeks, you really had a boon. Unfortunately, just had to find out, you know, after the deadline, you had to drop him basically for somebody else. Another reason why this backfield, just not overly happy with, it just was not consistent after that bye week. As for wide receivers, we have A.J. Brown. Obviously, we know he is an absolute superstar, finished as wide receiver 5 on the year in total points. He's that kind of guy. You know, he had a really slow start to the season, if I'm remembering correctly. Came out of the gate first 2 weeks, 11 and 4 points, really didn't do anything. 29 receiving yards on 4 catches week 2. Then he went 20, 38, 17, 18, 26, 31, 16 to finish up first half of the season. And then, of course, like we just talked about, everyone in Philly died after the bye. You know, he did have 4 weeks of double digits, but he also had 4 weeks of less than double digits, which is not what you want from your number one guy. Also only scored one touchdown after the break, which was kind of nuts. Again, not going to be high touchdown volume. He is not the deep threat. They have Devontae Smith there, obviously. Fun fact, Julio Jones and his corpse were on that team, but enough of that. But A.J. Brown is one of those guys I think you can safely take, you know, specifically toward the end of the first round, and just know he's a fairly reliable guy. I think he's happy there. I think Hurts is going to, you know, get him the ball a little bit better. I know Devontae Smith is there, but that becomes the age-old question. Do you want a elite wide receiver with no one else there to take away targets, or do you want opposing wide receiver on the other side of the field that, you know, won't allow for bracket coverage, meaning safety and cornerback over him at all times? You know, it's kind of tough, but I do think having Devontae Smith there does open up lanes. It can be a little frustrating when A.J. Brown puts up a clunker, which he has been known to do. But again, top five wide receiver, kind of hard to argue with saying he's going to be anything but. On that note, Devontae Smith, kind of talked about him a little bit. Kind of same thing. You know, he had his weeks. He is a lot more someone that I'm happier with in a best ball. You know, he was in this weird, like, run of wide receivers, teams number twos, going in the second round, early third, ahead of other number one wide receivers, which I just could not fathom. He was going ahead of guys like DJ Moore, Mike Evans, Keenan Allen, not Stephon Diggs, but, you know, Debo Samuel, maybe even Devonta Adams in a couple, and definitely Amari Cooper. These are number one wide receivers that people were taking number twos ahead of just because they thought they were good offenses. And that really seemed to be in vogue this year, and that did not work out well. T. Higgins, Devontae Smith. I'm trying to think of a few other guys like that that were number two on their teams. You know, Ayuk ended up having a pretty good year. But a number of these guys were taken early, and it did not work out. And I really hope people learned a lesson from that. You know, it's something I'm glad I was able to avoid. Jalen Waddle, another one. These guys should not be taken ahead of elite stud wide receivers in that second round. These are guys that should be going late third, early fourth. You know, after the first slew of wide receivers are off the board of, you know, really true number one targets on their team, you do not want a number two as your number one. That's just, I feel like an obvious thing, but, you know, a lot of people found that trap this year, but luckily it was not me. I cannot even see where Devontae Smith finished a wide receiver because ESPN is absolutely shitting on me right now, but I do know he was not very high. He was decent. He had 194 points compared to 254 for the season in 2023, a difference between a 15 and a 12.0 average. You know, not terrible, but definitely not great. This is saying average ADP on ESPN was 52.6, but I do know that this does not always match up exactly with, you know, in reality where someone actually was drafted in other leagues. Finally, we have Dallas Goedert at tight end. He was one of those tight ends that was drafted as like a top, I think like he was like 5, 6, 7 in that range. Just, he's not healthy. I was not in on him. I'm glad I was not in on him. He really didn't do much this year. You know, to start the season 4 straight weeks under 7 points, put up 23 because that's what Philadelphia Eagle players can do. 6, 16, 5, 6. Then he had the bye, missed 3 straight weeks. 5, 5, 10, 13, 1 to finish the season. No. That is the tight end landscape, but I feel like I shouldn't even say that because it seemed to kind of make a turn. This is not someone I want to be drafting in the top 5 at tight end, maybe not even top 6 or 7. This is a guy back end tight end 1, honestly. And I can't even say, you know, I feel strong about that. There's a lot of other young tight ends that seem to be ascending. Who knows what happens tomorrow with Garrett Bowers, but, you know, there's a lot of really good Brock Bowers. You know, there's a lot of good tight ends that are in the league, a bunch of younger guys with health, and I just don't know if I can, you know, have my tight end one or only tight end, because I don't do two, as Dallas Goedert when he's number 3 on the roster in receiving, including the running back and quarterback. He's just not a key part of the offense, and that's not what I want to be investing in. Moving on next, we have the New York Giants at 6-11, 3-3 on the season. Not a team I was investing in, honestly, in any way, shape, or form outside of a few darts late at wide receiver. Start down the list, though. Daniel Jones, he was a guy I was on the year before. I really was concerned with his lack of weapons. I know he can run the ball, but not really someone I wanted to invest in. I'm glad I did not because he was utter dog shit. He was drafted, I feel like, as a top 10 quarterback. Jesus Christ. Top 10 quarterback, and he did not perform. You know, when he was on the field, which he was hurt a good portion of the year, he did not perform in that manner. And glad I was able to avoid him. He was not even the top scoring player, I think, on this team. If I had to look at it. Slowly bringing it up now. Barely above the defense. The defense was a number two scoring player in fantasy. He was number one, obviously. Quarterbacks are always number one, but, you know, not someone I was happy with. Tyrod Taylor as a backup actually made me a little bit more comfortable in taking him as a like a QB2, but again, you know, he was a back-end QB1 and not something I was going to invest in. I don't think the weapons he has have changed at all. Can't say that I'm feeling good about him entering 2024 at all. I think it's just a situational void. You don't want to invest a key pick, specifically at a key position, which quarterback remains, on a shitty team. It's just, I feel like that's a staple that you kind of need to deal with. You know, you have to set your line in the sand somewhere, and I think not drafting Daniel Jones is an easy one. Moving on, looking at wider running back, we have Saquon Barkley. I just kind of mentioned he's now with Philly. Of course, not even showing him on the Giants. This is why it's such a pain in the ass, but you know, he was someone who was drafted in the first round. He had an okay year when he was on the field. I feel like he actually started pretty hot and unfortunately just kind of fell off a cliff at that point, pulling up his weekly. Oh, he is hurt right away, yeah. So first 2 weeks, scored 8 and then 24, missed 3 weeks due to injury, and then he had a pretty solid middle of the season. You know, I don't know where he ended up scoring. This is fucking worthless. I really hate this. Fucking ESPN absolutely killed me. Wasn't pedestrian. He was solid. When he was on the field, he was pretty solid, but he only broke 100 yards once. Receiving numbers weren't what they used to be either. He only broke more than four receptions, three times, four, four, and six. Everything else was three or less. He's not the guy he used to be. It's not the league where you're going to be drafting running back high up anymore. So I think Saquon in Philly does change things a little bit, but, this is more of a cautionary tale. The mileage is up there. His age is getting up there. Wasn't a great situation. Do people who drafted him regret it? Maybe not necessarily, but I also know that drafting a high pick like that on him versus one of the wide receivers going in the first, early second, I think they're a little bit upset about that. So that's kind of my note on Saquon is cautionary tale of what the NFL is like now. Aging running backs, guys with high mileage, stuff like that. That's just kind of what you have to avoid. Backing him up was Matt Breida, nothing specific. That dude is injured even more than Saquon is. Wide receiver, we had a room of misfits led by Darius Slayton. He ended up being one of the best wide receivers in this room as of last year, which is pretty funny to me. He was someone I was on a few years ago, and what I really wanted to do this year is I felt like someone had to break out. I felt like they really needed a wide receiver to step up. So I was taking darts on Isaiah Hodgins and Paris Campbell really late in drafts, like 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th round. And then, of course, neither of them panned out. They were both absolute dog shit, literally not worth being owned at any point in the season, which is kind of weird because my reason behind Hodgins was he kind of broke out late in 2022, was really hoping he might be the guy to step up. Paris Campbell was acquired in the offseason. He's more of a slot guy. I thought that would be a little bit more reliable. And neither of those obviously came to fruition. And then there was Jalin Hyatt. He was kind of the, outside speedy guy, which they have every fucking wide receiver on this team really seems to be that. And, did take a flyer on him in Dynasty, and he seemed to be the one dude who did kind of break out. He ended up being the number three wide receiver in terms of points this year. Nothing really specific, but, he had a few games where he kind of broke out, and it seemed like he kind of was catching a groove with Daniel Jones, but between Jones missing time and, just the roulette at wide receiver, it was kind of hard to kind of, narrow anything down regarding, consistency and chemistry. So kind of something to keep an eye on this offseason. Once bitten, twice shy. I can't say after being bit last year trying to do this that I'm going to do it again. Now, I did invest late round picks, so it didn't really cost me much. However, when something like that happens, it's just kind of hard to go back to it. So I think at this point I'm going to sign off on Giants wide receivers, but maybe tuck away Jalin Hyatt might be someone worth targeting, especially in like the 12th, 13th round or higher in specifically best ball. I think that's where he shines the best. At tight end, the one person I did kind of like, and I say that hesitantly, Darren Waller. So Darren Waller, we also know is injury prone, but looking at this wide receiver core, we knew like dead bodies all around. So I figured if someone would succeed, it would be Darren Waller. He ended up being solid. He was, on average, the highest scoring wide receiver in this group, averaging a whole whopping 7.3 points per week. He started off decent. 5 points week one, 10, and then slowed down 3, 3, 12, 6, 19, really caught a stride, and then got hurt against the Jets in week 8. Subsequently missed the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, including the bye. And then finish off the season with 6-4-7-7. On the landscape of tight ends, if you're not drafting him top six and expecting great numbers, that's pretty solid. Problem is, if you draft Darren Waller, you're basically signing up yourself to at least pick up another tight end if you don't even draft one late. And that's kind of the concern. In a one-and-done position like that, I don't really want to invest in injury-prone guys. I have the same idea at quarterback. I don't want to have to roster multiple people for something like that due to injury. I want to have my guy and just set and forget and kind of leave it at that. I'll focus my time on running back, wide receiver, the roulette that can be in fantasy. So I can't really think I'm going to be much on Darren Waller next year, but it is someone that I thought was solid at the end of, throughout the year last year when he actually did play. Moving on, the last and certainly least team in the NFC least or East is the Washington Commanders, finishing the season at 4-13, 0-6 within the division, which is quite a feat. Might have been the only team in the league to do that. Washington Commanders were a dumpster fire. They really had no redeeming qualities going into this year. They were a team I can confidently say I had zero shares of basically across the board, with one exception being Brian Robinson. And I need to fix this document. Brian Robbins. Wow. Okay. Anyway, quarterback. Start off with Sam Howell. He is no longer there. I want to say he is in Washington, and I immediately don't think that's correct. But anyway, he has left town. He is no longer the starting quarterback here. They're going to be drafting one tomorrow. I can confidently say that with their top four overall pick. But Sam Howell's gone. He was a guy who has, you know, ability to run. Kind of actually thought he might be someone to take a dart on in dynasty leagues, and I actually tried to acquire him in mine prior to the league starting last year in 2023, but didn't end up coming to fruition. He actually started pretty good. He was solid, I want to say, actually, to start the season. People were kind of surprised at how he was and kind of fell off after that. One of the biggest and interesting facts, I think, is, you know, they brought in Eric Bieniemy at offensive coordinator, and people were kind of wondering, you know, is Bieniemy one of those guys that is going to leave Arian Foster, not Arian Foster, Jesus Christ, Bruce Arians, not even Bruce Arians either, Jesus, brain fart, Kansas City and just not do well. There's where I'm going. He had 300 yards passing often, you know, in the first, I don't know, before their bye week, which was late in week 14, he had 5 games over 300, one at 290, one at 299. This guy was slinging it around. The problem was interceptions. Four interceptions against Buffalo week 3, one week 1, one week 5. He could not hold on to the ball, and that's kind of what caused this fantasy stock to plummet. You know, after the bye week, he had a 25-point week and then three straight 10s. That's not going to cut it. You know, he put up numbers. The problem was very inconsistent. Not someone, again, that I think you really want to build around. He was someone that I think if you had a QB2, you were very happy with considering where you drafted him. But again, there's a week he has 6 points against Buffalo when he threw 3 picks. Start off the season, he had 19. He had 12 points against the Giants in week 6. You know, there was a lot of low games that he had in his repertoire in 2023. You know, going into 2024, he's not a talented guy that I think I want to invest in. Well, I want to see he went to Atlanta. You know, he's a real-life quarterback worth a dart, I think, if they can actually teach him better throwing mechanics and, you know, reading defenses better, moving to a second and third read. But he's not someone that, fantasy-wise, I want to be investing in whatsoever. Backed up by Jacoby Brissett and Jake Fromm, just FYI. At running back, we had Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson. Brian Robinson was someone I actually liked, and the reason being was his draft day cost. He was going at, like, the 8th round in 12-team leagues, which is bananas to me. ESPN saying his average drafted position was like 84.5. He was not being taken. He was being very disrespected. I thought a lot of people just assumed Antonio Gibson was still taking all the receiving down work, which I knew would not be the case. I thought he was going to get the ball early and often, and he started off the season pretty hot. First 4 weeks, 3 of those, he had double digits, 3 touchdowns in the first 4 weeks as well. Kind of died a little bit there, weeks 5, 6, 7, 8. He had 1 week of 10 or more, and then again did pretty decent. But then it got hurt, you know, around the time of the bye. I think it was week 13 against Miami. 7 carries, 53 yards, got hurt, had a good day. Had a bye following, missed 2 more weeks, and then finished off the season kind of slow. You know, he was someone I thought that could be a good running back 3, which he was a fantastic running back 3, even you know, he was a borderline running back 1 to start the season, which is insane. But again, just kind of explains what the running back landscape was like this year. You know, someone like him, those are the types of guys you want to find late in drafts. Someone who has a chance to take over the backfield. You know, Antonio Gibson's been around and done absolutely nothing with it. You know, these are the types of guys I think you want to target late, specifically at the running back position as you target wide receivers early. Looking at the team now, though, they did bring in Austin Eckler. It will be interesting to see how this goes. If it's going to be more Brian Robinson A, Eckler B, I can't imagine that's the case, especially with how much money they paid. But, you know, if Eckler isn't getting goal line work, which, you know, he is known for his nose at the goal line, you know, Brian Robinson's a bruiser. It's something to consider. I don't know if I want to invest in this backfield next year, but again, all depends on draft day cost. Moving on to wide receiver, we had Scary Terry McLaurin. He was someone I was just lukewarm on. I think he was going kind of around the similar area of like somewhere between 6th and 9th round. You weren't investing a high pick on him. You weren't really expecting much for him. that's why I was okay with him at that cost, but he was not someone I was actively targeting in any way, shape, or form. He was just someone, if he was there around that time and I needed a wide receiver, you know, more stability even, he was someone I was okay with. And I think, you know, depending on what they do at quarterback, kind of might be the case, you know, next year. You know, they also have Jahan Dotson there. He is someone who has not been able to figure it out. You know, high, talented guy. He shows flashes. He's definitely done it a few times. You know, last year he had 8 catches, 108 yards, and a score 1 week. Followed that up with 4, 69, and 1, but zero, and then never. He had 5 points basically twice after that, and that was, you know, I just talked about week 8 and 9. Plenty of games after that. 10 points one other time before. I don't know. Not someone I'm going to be investing in. You know, I think he was a flashy name coming out of college. People have been kind of rooting for him, thinking he's someone that could, you know, develop into maybe a fantasy superstar. Has not thus far. I don't expect he'll do it with a rookie quarterback next year. I'm out. Finally, for pass catchers here, Logan Thomas at tight end. He is a dead body. They now brought in Zach Ertz. Just something to note. Old, decrepit. Can't imagine I'm going to really invest there either. It will be a good real-life situation for an NFL quarterback. Not quite fantasy-related, though. And then Curtis Samuel, you know, he was someone I did not like. I'm not even going to lie. But he is kind of in the Deebo Samuel role. He was someone I thought was actually I liked taking a flyer on him in 22. He had a few weeks in 23, but ultimately not really something fantasy relevant outside of deep leagues, like the Guillotine League that I was in with like 18 teams or whatever it was. Alrighty, big swig at the bush. On to the preseason champion, Detroit Lions. Prior to 2023, if you could have crowned two teams Super Bowl contenders, it would have been the Browns and the Lions, because that's how people always do it in the offseason. But Detroit Lions finished 12-5. On the season, 4-2 in the division, won the division for the first time in, I don't know, maybe my lifetime. Ended up having a pretty good season overall. They ended up losing in the NFC Championship in a tough game to the 49ers, but, you know, ultimately had a great season. Young, upcoming team. I think it's incredibly hard not to root for, especially with the head coach biting kneecaps off. Ultimately a team that is very fantasy relevant, but what's funny is at the quarterback position, the most important position in fantasy sports, not really a team you want to invest in. You know, again, specifically at the quarterback position. Finishing right behind the Chargers and the Commanders at here. Let's see, at quarterback 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 15. Quarterback 15. You know, points per game wise, I feel like he was actually pretty stable. I had him as my QB2 in a 2 QB league. That was perfect. You know, he basically had a few weeks under 15 points. Rare, few and far between. I'd say one every 3 out of every 4 weeks, one out of those. And putting up 25-plus points, you know, fairly often. He was a guy who, you know, if you went kind of risky, which in the league I took him in, I had Tua, perfect complement to that. He is not someone that I think you want two boring quarterbacks in, you know, like, I don't even know, I'm trying to think boring quarterback. Like Brown, you don't really want Browns and Lions as your two quarterbacks. I do think, though, considering this offense, I think he's going to remain a very good QB2, but can't say that Jared Goff, according to my list, Jared Goff is someone that I am going to be investing in for fantasy purposes necessarily in 2024, especially considering, as I kind of mentioned earlier, you need a rushing quarterback really in today's fantasy landscape. So, again, QB2 leagues, fine. I think he's actually a really good QB2, but QB1, just not someone I'm going to be investing in at all headed into 2024, unless they have to make a big splash, which I don't suspect. Side note, he was backed up by Teddy Bridgewater and Hendon Hooker, someone I have invested in Dynasty, but have not seen anything from yet. Maybe he gets handed the keys in 2025, who knows. Moving on to running back, David Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs, and then Craig Reynolds as the third on that list. This was a room that was difficult to maneuver in the offseason heading into 2023. Obviously, we know the Lions drafted Jahmyr Gibbs. I think he was the second running back off the board in the draft in 2023. You know, we knew that Detroit was going to be using him, you know, early and often. You know, not quite sure how it's going to work out because everyone knows David Montgomery is one of those guys who can kind of do it all. It could be an every down back. But obviously, bringing him in and what we know, how they used their running backs in 2022, that Montgomery was going to be a short yardage guy. So I think a lot of people were drafting Montgomery, you know, actually not too late in drafts, according to ESPN, 78.6. Feels about right, 8th, 9th, 10th round. Hoping he would just be a touchdown guy. I was a little worried about that because you don't invest a top 10 pick in a running back and then not use him. And the Lions, you know, proved that to be correct. You know, Jahmyr Gibbs ended up finishing, you know, pretty strong at the position. I don't know exactly where he finished, like, overall. Actually, I do. He finished at 6, according to my fantasy points total. Wait, nope. Close to 10, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Like 9 or 10th, according to fantasy points total. He ended up having a really good year. You know, he did start slow as they kind of eased him in, and then he absolutely took off. So first 4 weeks, he had no more than 10 points. He had 2 weeks off against Carolina, Tampa, and then he hit fire. He hit 23-plus points in 3 straight games, followed by an 18. You know, kind of took a little bit of a dip there in the middle, but finished strong, 3 straight 10-plus point performances against Chicago, Denver, Minnesota, even though they're dog shit defenses against a run. And then finished tough against Dallas and Minnesota, where he had less than 10 each. But he had a really good season. You know, I think the arrow is pointing up. Question is going to be, is someone like him going to be able to stay healthy and be a viable fantasy asset long term? You know, if he costs you a second round, early second round pick, I can't say I like that. But late second, early third as like the 7th, 8th, 10th quarterback running back off the board, you know, I think that's kind of where he belongs. I do think touchdowns are going to continue to be vultured by David Montgomery, but I think they're slowly going to bring Gibbs in more and more and more and, you know, eventually make him, I can't say a workhorse because I feel like a 50-50 split is more likely than not, but it's hard to argue the talent and it's hard to give David Montgomery the ball when you have Jahmyr Gibbs. At least that's my thought. So someone I kind of like heading into 2024, again, comes back to draft day cost though. Next on the docket, we have the wide receivers. We have Amon-Ra St. Brown, Sun God, Jameson Williams, the betting man himself, Josh Reynolds, Khalif Raymond. Latter two of those, you know, guys to have in the back of your mind. They did come in and have a few weeks, you know, periodically when, you know, someone was hurt, specifically Jameson Williams, or when he had suffered his suspension early on to start the season, missing the first 4 weeks due to his gambling issue or whatever. You know, but again, names that just tuck away. Amon-Ra St. Brown, though, absolute superstar. He was someone going at the end of the first round in every league, finished 3rd in points four, about 30 points ahead of number 4, Puka Nacua. Again, running back landscape was kind of weak, but wide receiver is kind of weird this year, too. I feel like it kind of fell off a cliff after the first few guys, and there was just a kind of a bunch of guys in the middle, and scrolling down, it definitely seems that way. But yeah, Amon-Ra separated himself from that list. I think, you know, early second-round pick last year was a steal. He was on my board there. He did outproduce even my expectations, though, there. I think he's someone that mid-first, late-first is where he needs to go next year. Mr. Consistent. He scored 14 points or more every week except for two, one of which he had 3 for 21 against Chicago. I don't know what happened in that game. Week before, he had 11 against New Orleans, only 2 for 49, but he did score a touchdown. This dude gets the rock, and he is a stable floor. It is exactly what you want in your number one. And he also did go off a few times. The only thing really holding him back from being, I think, really that top-tier elite guy is tight end, touchdowns. You know, never had a multi-touchdown game. He had 10 on the year, which is pretty solid, but I feel like a bigger body in Jameson Williams. Sam Laporta, who had, I think, 10-plus touchdowns himself too. You know, these are guys who are going to take away the touchdown, I think, keeps him away from being an absolute elite guy. And he's not someone who's going to break, you know, 200 receiving yard games. He did finish the season on a high note, 144, but he had 2 games, 144, 1, 156. Other than that, he never even broke like 110, I don't think. He did a couple times, but not by much. You know, he's 6 catches, 100 yards. That's his day. If he catches a touchdown, I think you're really happy. But again, it's, I think, exactly the type of guy that you want to invest one of your late first round picks on, but top 3, maybe not as much. Finishing up with the Lions, we have Sam Laporta and Anthony Firkser at tight end. Laporta, one of those rookie tight ends that kind of broke the mold. Again, not something that I think we can take away from this year. Rookie tight ends had not been, you know, fancy or relevant in the past, and all of a sudden this year we had a number of them between Trey McBride, Sam Laporta, and a few other younger guys. And, you know, he really broke onto the scene. I think he was the number one scoring tight end this year. Really kind of surprising his touchdown numbers were pretty solid. I think that's really what kept him afloat. This offense is good. They have a lot of mouths to feed. I don't think he can be your number one tight end off the board next year, though. Is he only going to get better? Probably, but his touchdown numbers were pretty fantastic. 10 touchdowns as a tight end, a rookie tight end, I just feel like it's tough, especially in the offense that wants to run the ball first. They have a lot of options. He's a really talented guy. I'm not going to spend a third-round pick on him, especially given, you know, what tight end looked like it became last year. Options, there was a number of guys at tight end I think you could have started every given week and been happy with. First time I feel like I've said that maybe in the last 20 years. But realistically, tight end seems to be kind of unfolding a little bit before our eyes, and I think that's kind of worth noting. And one of the reasons why I'm probably off Sam Laporta entering 2024. On the second best team statistically in the division, we have the Green Bay Packers finishing 9-8, 4-2 within the division. Green Bay Packers last year, a lot of people were basically selling off. They thought they had no chance. Maybe that's because I live in Chicago and all the Chicago Bears fans were hoping that would be the case, but that seemed to be what I heard more of. You know, no one really invested in this offense outside of, you know, the dynamic duo of Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon, and then taking a dart on Christian Watson. I think he was like a fourth round pick or maybe sixth round pick. People were not investing in this team at all, and I thought that you were kind of going under the radar, you know, starting with Jordan Love at quarterback. Did not, in my wildest dreams, think he would be a good fantasy quarterback. He ended up being pretty damn good. 378 points on the season. I don't know exactly where that puts him at point per game, but it looks like, according to my ESPN list, he finished 7th in fantasy points at quarterback. You know, he was pretty stable. There's a lot that concerns me about his play. I think he throws off his back foot and lofts the ball quite a bit, but he put up 20-odd points almost every single week. You know, he had a small run there of 4 straight weeks under 20, but literally every other game except for one outside of that range, he had 20 or more. He was consistent. He threw touchdowns. And maybe part of that was due to the running back corps being just decimated with injury and being weak throughout the season. But, you know, Jordan Love, fantasy quarterback, number 7. I don't know if he can repeat that, but I do think a lot of people are going to be investing in this team next year. And I think that actually may be where you have to step back and think, okay, why was I wrong in 2023, if you were? And think, you know, what can they do to improve? I think everyone's enamored with Jordan Love. I have a feeling he's going to go at quarterback 6, 7, 8. I think he's more of a back-end QB1 type guy. But, you know, for that reason, I'll probably be off of him. But I have no problem admitting I could be wrong. You know, it's going to be tough to kind of judge where he's going to be next season, you know, come the end of 2024/25 season. Running back, we had Aaron Jones, third, fourth round pick, someone I just wasn't really thrilled with. I don't think I had shares of him really at all, which, you know, is kind of good considering, you know, he's not on the team anymore. So of course his fucking numbers don't pop up, but he was hurt to start the year, really was wishy-washy, came on for a few hot weeks. And then, you know, the biggest issue is his health. He's never been healthy, you know, between he and A.J. Dillon. If you drafted both, you thought you would get something. And A.J. Dillon was absolute dog shit. Don't get me wrong. He was drafted in like double digit, like 12 plus round. You know, but 13.6 was his high. He had 10 points basically every week between weeks 5 and 14. He had 8.8, 8.1. He had 1 week a little bit lower than that. You know, he was consistent, but consistently not great. Something that you could not use as your RB2. And something you don't really want to use in your flex anymore. You need a wide receiver that can get you 20 or, you know, at least like 6, 7, 8 isn't tough to get. You know, A.J. Dillon is a handcuff. Now they have here Josh Jacobs. Could that be reasonable? I guess, but I don't think I want to invest in this backfield at all next year. I'll kind of avoid this for next year or for a little bit later on, preseason type stuff. But Josh Jacobs being there, I don't think it really moves the needle. Probably a little bit better overall than Aaron Jones. Can't really say he's much better, but maybe a little bit. That's kind of where I'll leave it. Wide receivers, Christian Watson, Romeo Dobbs, Jaden Reed, and Dontavian Wicks. Wide receiver core here was basically hell in a handbasket. I wanted nothing to do with Christian Watson. If you broke down the points per game in 2023 for he and Romeo Dobbs, it was almost equal. But everyone remembers Christian Watson going banana land for 4 straight weeks, and he did not meet expectations at all. drafted as, I think, like a fourth-round pick, wide receiver two for a lot of people. Started off slow. He missed two out of the first three games, put up a goose egg against Atlanta, had 9-10, had his bye, and then he had 7 weeks after that. 4-4-4-3-9-17-24, missed the final five games. Health is an issue. You know, he did show a little bit of chemistry with Jordan Love, I think, in this Kansas City and Detroit game where he had 24 and 18 points. But, you know, I can't do it. Again, he's another guy. He's boom or bust, and I can't take bust that early in drafts. If he's going in the 7th, 8th, 9th round as a wide receiver 3 or 4, maybe. But the problem is, you know, he didn't even finish as a number one wide receiver in the team. That ended up being Jaden Reed, who somehow scored a touchdown seemingly every week to finish the season. Someone I actually picked up and kind of rode for fantasy relevance for a while. He had double digits more often than he didn't. He had 15-plus points, again, more often than he didn't, specifically after the bye in week 6. He was Mr. Reliable. He was exactly what you want your wide receiver 3 to be. You know, was part of that because Christian Watson was out? Maybe. Also, maybe he really started to develop chemistry with Jordan Love during that time. So it's kind of tough to figure out what's going on here. And then we had Romeo Doubs, who 10th round or later, he was actually fairly consistent, you know, 10 to 15 points basically every week for the first 11, maybe even like 13 weeks. He was fairly good for most of those, at least much more often than not. Problem is, again, how much of that was because Watson was hurt or out? How much of that was before Jaden Reed really caught fire at the end of the season? And then, oh yeah, Dontavian Wicks is around, and he had a pretty decent end of the season too, having 10-plus points in half of his games following week 11 on. So, again, this wide receiver core, I feel like every year in fantasy, something like this occurs where some people are like, it's going to be Watson, it's going to be Reed, it's going to be Wicks, maybe it's Doubs. I find it's more often than not better to just avoid unless you can take two or three guys from this core back in, I don't know, double-digit rounds and really just throw a dart and hope someone breaks out. Problem is, when there's so many mouths to feed and in an offense that's not going to stop running the ball, I don't know if it's worthwhile. So I think this might be yet another offense I just kind of avoid for the most part. You know, good things for Jordan Love if he's a back-end quarterback one, maybe high-end QB two, which I highly doubt, considering everyone seems to love him. You know, for that reason, I think I'm just going to avoid. I don't know which wide receiver is going to break out, and I don't think we're going to know any given week either. I don't think there's going to be clarity throughout the year. I think it's just best to avoid the situation almost entirely. Tight end, we have Luke Musgrave and Tucker Kraft. Musgrave, I want to say, was another rookie tight end who really didn't really do much this year. I think he had a lot of hype going into the season for, again, some reason. Again, I'm avoiding the rookie guys, specifically a tight end. Not something I really want to invest in, and he was not anything special either. I don't know where he finished in terms of tight end. He actually finished behind Tucker Kraft. He had a total of 60 points this season. Kraft had 63 and 58. Avoid. I wanted nothing to do with this tight end room before the season. I'm glad I did absolutely nothing here either. Went on to the Minnesota Vikings. 2022, I remember, I think they had 13 wins, most of which were by a few points. People were saying, oh, they're pretty good. And I said, no, it's going to return to the mean. And they did. 7-10, 2-4 in the division, did not end up having a very good year. Part of it was due to quarterback play and injury to Kirk Cousins. Ended up tearing his Achilles. I don't remember exactly what happened, when that happened. Again, this is a team QB, but I do remember you know, Kirk Cousins went out, Nick Mullins was there, Joshua Dobbs came in, Jaren Hall started a game, wild stuff. Josh Dobbs, everyone probably remembers, was like QB5 or 6 halfway through the season for two or three even different teams at that point. I think he was with the Browns actually to start the season, and then Arizona, he was actually pretty good for a while, and then ended up with Minnesota. Ended up falling off the face of the earth toward the end of the season where he belonged. He was hot commodity for a while, more of just like a fun name to kind of throw around, but people were actually talking about him being fantasy relevant and being good, which was funny when that didn't happen anymore because it proved me true. But anyway, Cousins now is with Atlanta. I know he's with Atlanta for sure. I can't remember Sam Howell yet. Coming off the Achilles, I can't do it. He's 35-plus. Off an Achilles, just no. I will say that they are likely looking for a rookie quarterback to draft in this year's draft. It'll be interesting to see what they do because it won't be one of the big four unless they trade up, which I could easily see them doing, but they do need quarterback. It's a pretty good system, I think. You know, with Justin Jefferson there, Jordan Addison, Brandon Powell, they got a young core of guys. They have some targets. TJ Hockenson's there too. You know, Tyler Chandler, Alexander Mattison were holding down the fort, which Mattison is now jettisoned off somewhere else too. I don't remember exactly where, but, you know, he sucked anyway. Aaron Jones is now here. That's it. They have pieces. I think it's one fantasy relevance could come from the QB position. Not if it's a rookie. Putting my foot down, sticking with that. No rookie quarterbacks, no rookie tight ends. You know, again, it's the one-and-done position. I'm not investing multiple picks in and hoping. I want to know what I'm taking and take the right guy. And I'm just not doing that with a rookie quarterback entering 2023. As for Kirk Cousins, though, he was really hot to start the season when he was healthy. He started off absolutely blazes hot, top five quarterback, I want to say. 24, 35, 32, 19, 22 points to start off. Was really good and then really kind of fell off. Not someone I was particularly targeting. I had him in exactly zero leagues, so someone I didn't target at all. But did kind of come back down to reality before his Achilles was torn. I think that is going to carry a little bit into 2024. It'll be interesting to see how he's drafted in Atlanta, which is a good fantasy spot. But again, 35-year-old quarterback or older, torn Achilles, I am out. At running back, Alexander Mattison was actually a guy being drafted, I want to say like third, fourth round in most leagues, and out. I was 100% out, wanted nothing to do with him. He's not good. He did not fit the system well. He had never handled a backfield like this by himself, and he proved me right, did not do anything like that. Actually, Tyler Chandler was an interesting add late in the season in a few leagues for me. Had a 25-point week against Cincinnati week 15, finished with 7-7-9, obviously not ideal, but he was able to put a little bit together. I don't think he's a name either. This is clearly Aaron Jones' backfield moving forward. Again, I just mentioned my thoughts on him. Can't really say it's one I want to invest in, especially with the offensive line being questionable. Yeah, but that's kind of it. Finally, they did have Cam Akers here, which is hilarious to me. People were in on him with the Rams. I wanted nothing to do with him. Ended up trading here. People held out hope, and he could not start. He's dead. I love Cam Akers. He was a guy I liked coming out of college, and he's just his Achilles took him off really off the train tracks too. Wide receiver, we have Justin Jefferson, the number one overall pick in 2023. Reasonable. He started off the season with 150 yards, 159, 149, and then 85, but two touchdowns. 23 points, basically, the first 4 weeks each. Got hurt against Kansas City week five. Missed 2 months of play before coming back at the end of the season. Had 3.7 points against Vegas, 12 against Cincy, 25, 8, and 32. Finished off against Detroit, 12 for 192 and 1. He was the number one overall pick last year for a reason. He easily deserves to be a top 12 pick, top six at the wide receiver position. Can't say I would take him number one overall, especially because we don't know what it's going to look like there. But this is a guy who's going to demand targets, I think reasonably so. Still deserves to be up there. I think he was, you know, injury, obviously, hindsight's 20/20, but that first overall pick, he definitely deserved it based on his actual point per game production last year. Next, we have Jordan Addison, rookie wide receiver, who actually stepped in and did pretty well. Finished the season with like 900 yards, 911, and 10 touchdowns. Again, this is a prime candidate for touchdown regression, not someone I'm going to be targeting in 2024. A lot of his production came when Justin Jefferson was gone. You know, he did, you know, produce pretty well during that time. But, you know, 2 mouths to feed, especially in a guy who's due for touchdown regression, no, this is exactly who you should avoid. Also had K.J. Osborne here, someone I was a little bit more interested in when Justin Jefferson went down early, a little bit more stable floor type of wide receiver. He is no longer even here, so not really worth mentioning at this point. Finally, we have T.J. Hockenson. He was my number one tight end target in 2023. Ended up being really good. I don't know exactly where he finished in terms of tight end. Finished with 960 yards and 5 touchdowns, though. I think touchdown progression, scoring more, makes all the sense in the world. Did get hurt at the end of the season. I want to say, was it ACL Achilles? He missed the final 2 weeks of the season. I do want to say it's ACL. Problem is, obviously, with Hockenson, he's going to miss some time. He's going to start on the pup list. He's someone, don't overdraft. If you draft him late, again, at the tight end position where you have to take, you know, I like starting one, not someone I think I'm going to invest in a lot, but a name to keep in mind. He would be someone when he comes back, he could be a very valuable piece, especially for a rookie quarterback who really seemed to target the tight ends. If you just wanted to wipe your hands of it and say, I'm not going to mess with it, I think that is also understandable, given the injury, given the situation, given the fact that Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison are here, and they still have to run the ball too. You know, a lot of mouths to feed, rookie quarterback. I think it's okay to avoid him completely if you don't want to take a flyer on him late and put him on IR for the first 8-plus weeks. Finally, we have the Bears' final team in the division, finishing 7-10, 2-4 in the division, along with the Vikings tied in that aspect. Biggest thing, I think, with Chicago going into the season is this is a team I truly had zero shares of. I had a lot of concerns with Justin Fields, and I think those are reasonable. Can't hold on to the ball, fumbled it quite a bit, threw a lot of interceptions. Obviously does run the ball well. I think he finished top six of the position in 2022, but not someone I was going to invest a top six quarterback pick on, and happy I did not. Also, the way he plays, too, he is an injury risk. It's hard to obviously argue with that. Now he's on my favorite team, the Steelers. Obviously, kind of weird to say, but it is true. He's an injury risk, and the way he plays it, it's kind of hard to invest fantasy-wise. Luckily, you don't have to worry about that in 2024, as he is projected to back up Russell Wilson, at least to start the season. Probably solid flyer in best ball, I think, though. But not someone I really invested in, and I'm glad I did not in 2023. Running back, they had Khalil Herbert, Roschon Johnson, Dante Foreman. I'll save time and just say I wanted nothing to do with any of them. Points per game-wise, I think Khalil Herbert was actually pretty solid, but again, smaller, diminutive guy, had some good weeks, had some really down weeks, missed a lot of time, and he's now the number two to DeAndre Swift. I think this could be a good backfield, honestly, in 2024. Offensive line is shaping up. However, who do you have on a weekly basis? I don't think, you know, with Justin Fields gone, they're going to have fewer rushing touchdowns from the quarterback position, but Caleb Williams is still going to get his. Yes, I know the draft is tomorrow, but he is definitely going to be taken first overall by the Bears. Anything different would be more shocking than Caitlin Clark not going first overall, which obviously she was. I don't know. There's a lot of mouths to feed in this offense in the backfield alone. A lot of guys who can carry. You know, they invested a top 4-round pick in Roschon Johnson. Khalil Herbert's there, and he's pretty good when healthy. Good offensive line. I just think there's going to be too many touches going around each week to actually have a really good fantasy running back. This is the type of offense, though, to throw a couple darts in the 6th, 7th, 8th round and just literally hope and pray one of them gets hurt and maybe you have a bell cow. I hate doing stuff like that. I probably won't be doing it, but anyone who does, can't really fault them for that. Wide receiver DJ Moore, I want to say, was a 5th or 6th round pick even. He ended up having a hell of a season. He had 1,364 yards, 8 touchdowns. Clearly, Justin Fields, and he had a rapport. What is very interesting, though, is, you know, one thing to note. Very boomer bust. First 3 weeks, 3, 15, 11, 25, good. 51 against Washington. He had 230 yards, 3 touchdowns. It was absolutely bananas. 7, 9, 7, 4, 8. That is, I think, part of the issue with DJ Moore. However, obviously, if you're listening at this point, you know Keenan Allen has been brought to town. Do they vulture each other? Keenan Allen is a very different receiver. DJ Moore is an explosive outside guy. Keenan Allen is more possession, 10 catches, 110 yards over the middle. You know, catch 5, maybe 8 touchdowns throughout the year. Will they vulture each other enough to where 1,100 yards and 5 touchdowns, which sounds great, but if you think about drafting either of these guys in the second round, I think you're goofy. It's the same thing I mentioned before about the second best wide receivers on their team being your fantasy number one. I can't do it. And in this offense, it's going to be fantastic for Caleb Williams. Again, not going to draft a rookie quarterback, even though this is a great situation for fantasy. I don't know. I have a feeling that both these guys are going to be, you know, a second, third round pick. And I don't think I can do it, even though Keenan Allen is one of my favorite players. Kind of hurts me to say. I don't think I can do it. It's just, I can't stomach that heading into 2024, drafting a wide receiver 2 on a team, which, again, could be either in the second round. I'd rather be taking a flyer on someone else who could be the true one there. Darnell Mooney and Velus Jones Jr. were on the team. That's all I need to say there. As for tight end, Cole Kmet, Robert Tonyan, Mercedes Lewis, who might be the oldest player that's not a kicker in the league. You know, Cole Kmet, they did pay. He is solid. I think he's more of a, you know, again, back end tight end one. You know, he had his weeks. He had some chemistry, and he was used a lot in the red zone. But, again, this offense has a lot of pieces. Rookie quarterback, yes, he may rely on the tight ends, but when you have two superstar wide receivers like DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, I'm just not going to invest in it. I did not invest at all last year. Happy with that. Didn't hurt me, and it won't hurt me in 2024 either. Moving on, we got two left, and as we sit here, I'm talking to myself, barely providing any reasonable information. We're now an hour into it, so I'll try to speed this up a little bit. San Francisco 49ers led the NFC West with a 12-5 record, 5-1 in the division. This was a team that was, you know, high hopes going into the season, I think. Not as high as I think they actually caught midseason. It was the Brock Purdy show is what really got the ball rolling. But anyway, going into the season, I thought they had, you know, pretty decent expectations to win the division. Seahawks are nothing special. We knew Cardinals suck and they were going to be missing the toddler for a while. And no one, I don't think, expects anything from the Rams. So, you know, kind of a weak division just handed to them on the platter. But overall, Brock Purdy ended up being a pretty fantasy-relevant quarterback, which surprises me. Another one of those tons of pieces around, and he ended up making it work, finishing number 5 in total points regarding Team QB in my league. It's hard to explain, but I can't really invest in Brock Purdy. I don't think there's anything special there, and I know that makes a lot of people angry to hear, but he's a guy in a perfect system. Now, should that matter for fantasy purposes? No. However, it sounds like Brandon Ayuk is going to be moving maybe as soon as tomorrow during the draft. And one thing about Brock Purdy that was evident, if one of the big three was missing, meaning CMC, Brandon Ayuk, or Kittle, I guess you could even go with Kittle there too, or Debo Samuel. If one of those guys was missing, his numbers plummeted. And with Ayuk leaving, you know, the injury concerns with Kittle, and, you know, I know CMC has been healthy now for 2 years, God, for whatever freaking reason. One of those guys goes down, they are going to be in a bad way. So I cannot condone drafting Brock Purdy next year for fantasy purposes unless he's a quarterback too, which, again, maybe he does, maybe I'm surprised, but I got a feeling he's going to be 7th, 8th, or 9th or something like that at quarterback. So just something to kind of keep in mind there, just not someone I'm really looking forward to taking at all in 2024, again, unless he happens to slip to QB2 territory. Running back Christian McCaffrey, he was a, I don't know, 3rd, 4th pick in almost every single draft, ended up being one of the top scoring players in fantasy that weren't quarterbacks. If not the number one, yep, looking right now, was the number one in my league, 20 points higher than CeeDee Lamb. Can't explain it. Dude was never healthy in Carolina. People love to point out, oh, they weren't related, even though it was soft tissue injury after soft tissue injury, which does correlate. And now he goes to the team that could never have a healthy running back. 2 + 2 = 6, and now he's healthy in the system, kicking ass. Is getting older, not someone I feel extremely confident in, which I know sounds goofy because he's going to go top 3 again in the draft, every single draft next year. I would be much happier with CeeDee Lamb, Tyreek Hill, Amon-Ra St. Brown, even, you know, someone in that round, probably even Justin Jefferson or receiver for Ja'Marr Chase. I would be much happier with a wide receiver in that range. I know he gives you an absolute massive advantage at the position compared to anyone else. I mean, fuck, he finished 110 points over Breece Hall, the running back 2. I just, again, can't do it. Backed up by Elijah Mitchell and Jordan Mason this season, doesn't really mean anything to me, so going to move on there. Wide receivers, we had Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and Juwan Jennings. Debo, I think, was a 3rd-round pick, and I felt like he was being a little discredited 3rd, sometimes even into the 4th. He was someone I actually liked quite a bit going into this season, and he had a pretty good year. Safely to say that he finished, I want to say, top 20 at the position, which is where I drafted him. He was pretty reliable week in and week out. You know, he did not run as much as I was expecting, but, you know, when you played him, he was pretty consistent. looking to begin the season. He had, in the first 6 weeks, 1.1 against Cleveland week since when he got hurt, missed the 3 weeks after that, including the bye. He had less than one against Arizona, but 20, 20, 10, 9, and then after the bye, 13, 7, 18, 35, 34, 19, 7, 15. That is exactly what you want out of your wide receiver, too. Deebo Samuel is in wide receiver two territory again next year. Bye, bye, bye. I absolutely want everything to do with that. I was in on him. I was happy with it. No regrets there. Brandon Ayuk, I don't know what it is, if I have a personal hatred for him, but he's someone that I did not have many shares of. He fit right along with Deebo Samuel, had seven more points. Same pretty much level of consistency week in and week out. He had, you know, 10 points very consistently, 15 more weeks than he didn't. After the bye, he had literally 13 every week, but three, one of those being week 18, which we can kind of wash our hands of. Consistent. That's what he was. And again, I think it speaks more to my concern of Brock Purdy, but I think Ayuk, if he's a third, late third, early fourth round pick, it's reasonable. Don't know if I can choose between him and Deebo, though, but I think that's the type of guy that you want on your fantasy team as your wide receiver two or even three. At your wide receiver three, I think you have to be thrilled. Finally, at tight end, we have George Kittle. I am backed up by Ross Dwelly, if that's worth anything. George Kittle was also very good. I think he was a top five tight end off the board, often like top three. Starting off the season really slow. 3, 5, 12, 1. 26 points against Dallas. Of course, that's a week everyone probably benched him. We went out for three touchdowns. Of course, followed it up by a one catch, 1 yard performance for 0.6 points in Cleveland, a half point of PPR. After that, though, I mean, again, 15 points more often than not. He was very consistent to finish out the season. A couple of point totals under five, but mostly 10 points or more. Again, I think it speaks to the offense. There's just so many pieces. You don't know who's going to do what. But again, if Ayuk leaves, Kittle might step up and even be a top two tight end. Question again is health. Didn't really miss a lot of time, though, in 20. He had the bye in the week 18 where he didn't play in 2023. He has a lot of history himself prior, but like I said, if Ayuk leaves, top three tight end, barring injury, of course. I think he's someone that you want to invest in 2024 if Ayuk does leave. Moving on, we have the LA Rams finishing at 10-7, 5-1 within the division. The Rams were led by Matthew Stafford, someone I did not want anything to do with this year for fantasy purposes. Matthew Stafford, I think, was taken quarterback 10-12 or so. Just not the range I want my quarterback, and I don't want an aging quarterback on his way out either. Just not something I was really looking forward to investing in. So I did not. It did not hurt me at all, and I don't think I have any thoughts on that changing entering next year. I'm even trying to see where the fuck you finished. Behind the Denver Broncos, Bears, Commanders, so, I don't know, QB 15-20 range, where he belongs, where he should be taken. Fine QB 2, I guess, but again, nothing I really want to invest in. One of the players I think to really talk about is Cam Akers. Everyone was in on Cam Akers going into the season, which I thought was hilarious because it was clear that Sean McVay was trying to get rid of him, and people probably don't want to admit it, but fourth, fifth round pick is where he was going. Literally not a single thought in my head about drafting him anywhere. He could have been available in the 14th round. I would not have taken him. The person I was taking, of course, at first was Zach Evans, rookie running back ending the situation, but who really broke off was Kyren Williams. Kyren ended up finishing as running back 5, and he proved why you want to invest in the Rams rushing situation. 17, 25, 7, 28, 6, 23. Those were his first 6 weeks of the season. Comes off the bye, rips off double digits every week. 37, 18, 14, 26, 18, 29. He did miss some time due to injury, but holy hell, did Kyren Williams explain why, or, you know, really show why you want to be invested as a Sean McVay running back. Unfortunately, that's a lesson I had learned before. I did ignore this year and did not take multiple pieces from. I really only took Zach Evans in best ball in a couple season long as my final pick. But, you know, he really was a beast and makes me question a little bit if it's going to be him next year. I have a feeling his draft stock's going to be high, like second, maybe even third round. I'm uncomfortable with that. I understand how valuable it is, but again, he falls in the category of players Can you win without Kyren Williams? Yes. Will he win you the championship if you have it? Maybe, but you also don't have to have him. But drafting him early and having him pull a Cam Akers situation would be disastrous for your fantasy squad. So tread lightly. Fourth round or later, I think I'd be a lot more comfortable with him there. But really got to pay attention to this backfield when the season comes around here in July, August of 2024. Wide receiver Cooper Kupp broke my heart. I ended up taking him in the first round in a couple leagues. He ended up getting hurt during the draft season prior to the actual NFL season. Knew it wasn't going to be long, and then he was an absolute disappointment, unfortunately. Looking at the Rams wide receivers, you know, I already talked about Puka Nacua finishing top four. You know, Cooper Kupp finished with over 100 points less than Puka Nacua did. He did miss some time. Let me see exactly. He missed the first 4 weeks of the season. Other than that, missed the bye in the final week of the season. You know, did his typical 25-point weeks three times throughout the season, but he also had, this is a straight five-week list, 5.9, 4.1, 5.8, 1.6, 3.3 with a bye in there too. He fell off a cliff. Begs the question, can Matthew Stafford only support one wide receiver? He's kind of done that his entire career. Sometimes kind of went between him and Puka. Puka did have a couple good weeks while Cooper Kupp did go on his tear. Toward the end of the season, he had 12, 23, 25, 8, and 10. You know, pretty good to finish the season for Kupp, but Puka also had his. Outside of that, Tutu Atwell, Ben Skowronek, DeMarcus Robinson wanted nothing to do with them. 2024, I don't know if I can invest in Kupp. Too many injuries. Seems like Puka might be that guy now, which you want with Matthew Stafford. However, where's Puka going to go? Is he going to be a second-round pick, early second-round pick? You know, makes me a little concerned here because if Cooper Kupp is healthy all year, you know he's going to get some targets. This is a situation I am very concerned about, and currently my thought is avoid as well. But again, price matters. Puka's going in the third, fourth round. I'm much more inclined to buy than the, you know, early second. And if Kupp's available in the 10th, obviously I'd take a stab there, but I have a feeling Puka is going to be a second rounder and Kupp's going to be a fourth, maybe even a fifth rounder. And I don't know, that kind of makes me a little concerned. And those prices are a little bit too high for me. Tight end, they have Tyler Higbee and doesn't really do anything for me. I want nothing to do with Tyler Higbee. I think he caught a little bit of steam in the draft cycle. He only had one game over double digits. Just don't even worry about it entering 2024. Seahawks, 9-8, 2-4 in the division. Geno Smith hangover tour began. Very glad I did not invest there whatsoever. A lot of people kind of fell for the trap where he finished as like a top, at least seven, I think even top five quarterback in 2022. I wanted nothing to do with him. I owned him in zero leagues. That hurt me in exactly zero leagues because he did not finish anywhere near the top 10 for quarterbacks. I want to say he was closer to the bottom 10. Yep, he finished 32. Quarterback 23. Not even a QB2, barely. Not a QB2 in 10 quarterback leagues. That's what Geno Smith got you last year. Can't say it's going to get better. You know, I think it will. I think he's going to be more of a late teens kind of quarterback finish, but glad I avoided him. I want no part to do with that quarterback room whatsoever, even if Drew Cocklock is gone. They brought in someone else. I don't remember off the top of my head right now, but there is going to be some competition there, and I don't want it. Running back, we had Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet. I was very, very concerned heading into the season this would be a two-headed monster, and then, of course, it ended up occurring that way. So I was a little bit happy to avoid it. Walker finished with 188 points, Charbonnet with 100 points less. So even though it doesn't seem like it on the surface, Walker was absolutely vultured. To start the season, pretty good first 4 weeks before their week five bye, 8.7, 17, 29, 13. First two after the bye, 16, 14. But then 7, 2, 21, 2, 7. I mean, not a lot going on in this offense. They had a poor offensive line. They have three good wide receivers, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and JSN. More on that in a second. But between these two, both second-round picks, they're not going to commit to them, then why should I? That's kind of the thought I had. A lot of people probably invested in this backfield early. You know, I think Walker was a third, fourth-round pick. Charbonnet kind of crept up. He was like eighth round, I think, 8 to 10. Not a bad stab on Charbonnet, but that's one of those, if you invest in 2024, you really got to take both and hope one gets hurt. Because, again, like, Walker had his weeks, but not what you invested in draft stock-wise. You did not get the return that you were expecting. So average draft position is a fourth round, according to ESPN here. So one of those situations I would like to take both, but I don't know. Not something I'm really excited about, especially that early in the draft where I'd rather have three wide receivers and one running back than, you know, taking my second running back knowing I'm already going to be investing another roster spot on his backup. Wide receiver, we have DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, and JSN. Metcalf finishing with 200 points on the season, Lockett with 160, and JSN at 118. Metcalf was solid. Biggest thing was he never really exploded. He won game of 38. Never broke 20 points other than that one time. You know, a bunch of 10s, 12s, you know, something solid. But, you know, someone you're drafting in the third, even the fourth round, you kind of want a little bit more from him. I'm worried about the quarterback situation here. I love DK, all-world talent, could be one of the best wide receivers in football. I think JSN really stepping in, and he's going to take more away from Tyler Lockett, who's still on the team as of now, but I could see going somewhere else. I don't know. Maybe DK, if he slips in like the fifth or sixth, I think would be a good pick. I did kind of like him going into this year, but despite the fact I didn't like Geno, but not someone that ultimately I'm super thrilled about, to be honest, at this point. I think there's just untapped potential, and that's going to be the story of his career. Tyler Lockett was 10th round pick or later, solid season, 900 yards, 5 touchdowns, best ball guy. You know, he basically checkerboarded throughout the entire season, double digits, 5 points, double digits, 5 points. I can't do that. Even from wide receiver 3 or 4, I can't take 5 points, and that's what happens consistently in this offense. It's just not something I'm willing to do, especially because, like I mentioned, JSN, rookie, 628 yards last season, 4 touchdowns. You know those numbers are only going north. Had a okay run in the middle of the season with 14, 11, 9, 7, 5, 5, 7 there in the middle of the season. I think he's only going to vulture more and more work away from Tyler Lockett. Could he be someone worth drafting? Which, hilariously, he went in single-digit rounds in fantasy ahead of Tyler Lockett. People were starting to take him as soon as, like, the fifth. Like, he had nasty steam heading in the season. Just not something I'm willing to invest in, a pick like that. But if he slips into the 10th or something like that next year, I think he's much more reasonable at that position. You do not want a tight end from Seattle, and I'll leave it at that. All right. Last team in the division, we have the Arizona Cardinals, 4-13, 0-6 in the division. Arizona was not a team I invested in much, especially because we knew Kyler Murray was going to miss a lot of time. They had Joshua Dobbs, who they let go once Murray came back, and he was backed up by Clayton Toon. Entering 2024, I think Arizona actually might be a low-key team to invest in. Fantasy-wise, at the quarterback position, Arizona finished, I believe it was like, no, they finished behind the Rams. So not the best, but when you look at kind of where they were as like a quarterback two, very good. I think Kyler is a low-key like quarterback one, especially if they take Marvin Harrison Jr., which I expect tomorrow. I think he could be a very viable, you know, fantasy guy entering 2024. Where I really invested was James Conner and the backfield here. He was one of those guys, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth round even, I think, sometimes, specifically early in the draft season, and then he started to kind of move up a little bit. You know, James Conner, yes, injury history is there, but nobody else is going to do anything. Finished the season 24, 16, 19, 27, 30. I want to say that's almost exactly how his season ended in 2022 as well. He just absolutely went off. That's what this guy does. He dominates touches when he's on the field. However, you know, when he's not on the field, there's a big concern. And that's why I try to back him up with not Amari DiMercato or whatever. He ended up being the backup. But, you know, they have Michael Carter there. I think he is a realistic backup. The backup situation here is a little unclear. Maybe they draft some dude in the third or fourth to back up Connor. He is aging as well, but you know, if he's going to be another seventh, eighth round pick next year as my running back four, screw it. I'll throw him into my flex every single week he's healthy and be happy with the production you get as a low-end RB1, and that's exactly what he is. 15 points per week, and he missed number of weeks when he got hurt during the week, and he had a run of 6-4, 7-7-5 in literally the middle of the season. But other than that, he had double digits every other week, which is phenomenal. So James Conner, a guy I targeted heavily, one of my most drafted guys this season, paid off leaps and bounds on someone that I think I'm going to be investing in 2024 again, assuming the cost is not terrible. At wide receiver, their number one scoring wide receiver, according to ESPN, that's still on the team because I know Marquise Brown is gone to KC. Trey McBride, another rookie tight end. Again, I don't know how to explain it, but Trey McBride was pretty solid. Another reason why I think the tight end pool is actually expanding and the reason why I'm not going to invest high-end picks at tight end, guys like Trey McBride were around and actually very viable throughout the entire season. Very talented guy, double digits fairly consistently. To end the season, he had 6 or more points from week 10 on by week 14. And, you know, his role is only going to expand, especially with the wide receiver core being Michael Wilson, Chris Moore, and Greg Dortch. Again, why I think Marvin Harrison Jr. comes here, but you can't tell me Kyler Murray isn't going to look at Trey McBride as their second read on almost every route. So I think Trey McBride, tight end 4. I mean, it sounds high, but shit, he's going to be at least a top 6 tight end, I think, at the end of next season. And I'm not sure he's going to be drafted that way, even though there was some rookie hype on him. But I do think he is someone that should be invested in heavily entering 2024. All right, let's finish this up with the NFC South, the worst division in all of fucking sports. Tampa Bay Buccaneers lead it off, 9-8, 4-2 in the division, led by QB Baker Mayfield. He had a one-off season. He got paid. Watch him absolutely dive. I wanted no part of him in 2023. I want no part of him in 2024. Running back, Rashad White was a guy that a lot of people liked in the draft season. I wanted nothing to do with him, and it bit me square in the ass. The exact reason why in the past I have said that specifically for running backs, touches trumps all. And Rashad White showed that by finishing as running back 7 this season. I can't even say he's a good running back. He had 990 rush yards and 6 touchdowns, which is very solid, but it's literally just based on volume. 3.6 yard per carry average is pathetic. You know, part of it was reception total too. I'm looking right now. He had 2 every single week. 4 or more, probably half the time. Never broke 100 receiving yards. But again, I mean, 3 catches, 30 yards can boost your rushing numbers. You know, this is why when you're evaluating prior to the season, you need to look at who else is around, who else is going to take touches. If the answer is nobody, you might want to target him. And I know Rashad White was, I want to say, 4th, 5th round pick last year. There was a lot of other guys I was taking in that area, but he was clearly worth a draft pick. Ooh, here's a 3rd round pick. I am absolutely going to avoid him next year. I think any person that they bring in could take away touches from him. But again, if they don't make a change, how do you not take him? Only question is going to be if they bring somebody in and what his draft price is. 3rd round pick, kind of have to bite based on what I'm seeing. But 2nd round pick, hell no, absolutely not. Backed up by Chase Edmonds and Sean Tucker, and they also have Patrick Laird, no relation to the funeral home. Wide receiver Mike Evans, Chris Godwin's. Mike Evans was absolutely the steal of the draft. He ended up finishing very high when it comes to all wide receivers. Try to pull that up right now, but I know he was drafted like 8th round. It was at least 5th round. It was between 5 and 8. ESPN saying average draft position of 31 is bullshit. Again, this shows maybe this is where he was in ESPN. He was not a 3rd round pick in any other draft I did. Any sort of best ball, other leagues, he was like 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and it was criminal. You know, this dude only poops out 1,000-yard receiving seasons. Of course, he alternates his touchdowns. Last year, he had 13 and 1,200 yards. Kind of surprised I wasn't in on him more. I was in on him compared to the masses, given where he was going in most leagues. Again, apparently ESPN had him ranked slightly higher, and this is where they say he's going, but I know he was not going in that level. But the exact reason why consistency matters. This dude produced with other quarterbacks, an aging Tom Brady, stuff like that you have to take into account and realize eventually, especially your wide receiver 4, 1,000 yards, 8-plus touchdowns, that has a role. And especially as your wide receiver 3 or 4, I think that's an absolute lock. Just something to keep in mind. Chris Godwin also had a solid year overall. I don't know where he finished at wide receiver. I'm not about to slide down there and find out. But when you compare him to Mike Evans, 80 less points, 250 to 170. Chris Godwin's still usable. Thing is, again, I didn't have any faith whatsoever in Baker Mayfield. He had a huge run between week 9 and week 15 of no more than 10 points, which, again, kind of kills you. But did have a 22-point week to follow, 10, 15, 8 to finish out the season. Just not a high-volume guy and not someone I'm really interested in. When you're picking someone like him in the 8th, 9th round and you're like, oh, maybe I'm taking a flyer on him, you're more or less hoping for a Mike Evans injury, and that's not how I like to draft my team. So not someone I'm really looking forward to at all in 2024. And then they have wide receiver Trey Palmer, Russell Gage went to the IR. And at tight end, they have Kate Otten. I literally don't have a thought on him. He's just a warm body. I did have him in best ball leagues entering 2023, but I don't care about Kate Otten. He's not a human being to me. New Orleans Saints, 9-8, 4-2, just narrowly missed out on winning the division because Tampa Bay ended up winning it based on, head-to-head or some shit. Quarterback, Derek Carr, Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill leading the charge there. No desire to have any of those guys whatsoever in any way, shape, or form. Derek Carr was a very, like QB2 for me, and that's basically it. He was my QB3 in a lot of best balls as a floor guy, and that was pretty much it. Running back, Alvin Kamara, had a suspension to start the year, missed the first 4 weeks. Ended up being someone taken, again, ESPN says 28.1. Total bullshit. He was not a third-round fucking pick. He was at least 4th, 5th, or even a little bit later. And he started out super hot. He had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 straight weeks of 13 or more points. Two of them went in the 20s to start the season. 9, 15, by 13, 25, and then fell off a cliff. 12, 13, 6, 5, and then to finish the season. Points per game, he was still very solid. I just don't know how much longer he can hold on. Small guy, diminutive, aging, touches are kind of building up there, always needs someone else there. You know, I know he had that 6-touchdown game on Christmas a few years ago, but, you know, not really a nose for the end zone. 5 touchdowns rushing in 2024, 700 yards rushing with a 3.9 carry average. I'm just not an Alvin Kamara guy anymore. I liked him coming out of school, had him in a dynasty league when he first came out, but just not really someone that I want to invest in. And I don't see myself doing it in 2024. Again, unless he's a 6th round or later guy. And even then, I don't know. Kendre Miller to me, rookie running back who I was starting to invest in early in the draft season last year, only had 40 points on the season. Not really someone that I had a little bit of high hopes for, but really didn't do much for me. He's someone that I think has a better chance to perform in 2024 over the likes of Alvin Kamara and Jamal Williams. Wide receiver, we have Chris Olave. He ended up being a very good wide receiver for the season, but I do feel like fell short of expectations a little bit. 3rd-round pick, he had his ups and downs. You know, he's still young, he's still ascending. He's someone that I think you kind of have to circle and highlight and say, you know, keep on the radar. Another 3rd-round pick next year, and I think I would buy at that price because you got to think he's going up. Question's going to be is what does a quarterback situation look like? You know, the wide receiver room is weak. Rashid Shaheed, Taysom Hill, Juwan Johnson, Michael Thomas, the ghost of Michael Thomas, Cedric Wilson, A.T. Perry. There's no names here. It's Chris Olave and everybody else. Lynn Bowden Jr., like, good Lord. So Chris Olave, I think, is one of those guys in the 3rd, 4th round. You know, do you think he has the potential to break into a possible 1st-round talent in 2025? No, but still a very solid piece. Very consistent, and I think whoever drafted him in the 3rd round last year is happy with the production that he gave them. Finally, at tight end, again, same thing. I want nothing to do with any of them. Fun fact, they had Jimmy Graham on the team last year, which is hilarious to me. Moving on, we have the Atlanta Falcons again. They now have Kirk Cousins there. And I want to say Sam Howell, but I can't really remember off the top of my head. I'll look after this is over and not remember 6 months. But anyway, 7-10 on the season, 3-3 in the division. Had a lot of high hopes for this team, and they fell short, mostly because of Arthur Smith being a fuckhead and not knowing how to use his players. But literally QB roulette between Taylor Heinicke and Desmond Ridder. Started both throughout the season, flip-flop back and forth. There was no consistency. They were both terrible. I can't invest in Kirk Cousins here. I know that they have one of the more talented surrounding staff, basically, with Bijan, Tyler Allgeier, Drake London, not Van Jefferson anymore, Mac Hollins, though, and Kyle Pitts and Jonnu Smith. I mean, they have talent all over the place. Again, I'm not investing in Kirk Cousins. In 2024, at least, or beyond. Moving on, running back Bijan Robinson. He was my number two running back off the board. He was drafted at 8th. Dude was a beast. 4.6 yard per carry average isn't fantastic. 976 yards as a rookie is, especially considering his lack of touches. He clearly one of those guys that just needs to be given the ball and get going to actually start doing well. But if you watched him play last year, you saw it. He absolutely can run through people. He can run past them. He can run around them. He can run in between the tackles. He can run outside. He can catch the ball. He can do everything. He needs to be at least a second-round pick next year, and I would not be surprised to see this dude win the rushing title. 1,500 yards, 10 touchdowns. You know, receiving-wise, he had 500 receiving yards. I won't be surprised to see this guy hit 2K all-purpose yards next year. I don't expect it, and I'm not going to predict it. I would not be surprised, though. Very good offense, one of the best offensive lines in football. Yes, Tyler Allgeier is there, but with Arthur Smith no longer being there, pulling away carries, he should not have 186 fucking carries. What a joke. 186 rushes to 214. Well, that's so criminal. Anyway, I was all in on Bijan. I took Tyler Allgeier everywhere, too, handcuffing him. I will do it again next year. I have no problem with it. Cordarrelle Patterson was there. Was not fantasy relevant and is now off the board. Wide receiver, we have Drake London pulling up on ESPN. Says that he was a late fourth, early fifth round pick, which I agree with. I think that's where he was going. Maybe fifth, even like sixth. But Drake London was someone I liked last year. He had a really good rookie season. I thought he could build up on it. Finished with 900 yards, 2 touchdowns. Very much due for positive touchdown progression. I think he's got, especially with Kirk Cousins there, this dude is looking up. He is someone, yes, hurt me last year, but you have to be a goldfish, short-term memory, move on. Drake London, I think, should be a fourth-round pick next year, maybe even a third. He could be a very good wide receiver. 1,000 yards, you know, 6-plus touchdowns. Very Mike Evans-esque, in my opinion. I think he is a very good wide receiver 2 and a great wide receiver 3, especially entering 2024. Unfortunately, did fall short of expectations in 2023, but again, you got to close your eyes and move on. Also had Van Jefferson, Mac Hollins, and Kadarius Hodge here, which again means nothing because they didn't use anyone in 2023. Finally, Kyle Pitts and Jonnu Smith at tight end. Kyle Pitts was drafted as a top 10 tight end. I think a lot of people were... Some people bought in, a lot of other people were already done and saying, you know, he has not met his very lofty pre-draft NFL expectations, which is true. Didn't help Arthur Smith handcuffed him to the bed last year, but I do think in 2024 with Arthur Smith gone, you know, sky's the limit with Kyle Pitts. Does he actually reach those lofty expectations? I think there's a chance that he can kind of start to seize those and realize them, but also wouldn't fault anyone for not taking him. If he is not taken in the top 8 at tight end or even top 10, I definitely think he's worth a target there, at least in 2024. Okay, last team, Carolina Panthers. Jesus fucking Christ, 2-15, 1-5, one of the worst teams in football. I'm not going to waste a lot of time here, but Bryce Young sucked ass. Everyone had him over C.J. Stroud in the NFL draft. Absolutely moronic. I hope the Panthers are just punching themselves in the nuts for that. But basically, they're terrible. They have the first overall pick. Oh, wait, no, they traded to the Bears. So the Bears have Caleb Williams coming this year. Panthers are just a dumpster fire, and they're not a team I want to invest in at all. The only player – sorry, I shouldn't say that. I did invest in Miles Sanders. I thought he could be okay here because I thought this team had some semblance of at least like a floor. I didn't think they would be this bad, but I thought, you know, stay in a decent amount of games. Miles Sanders has been decent elsewhere. You know, famously backed up Saquon Barkley at Pitt was a pretty good, Penn State, sorry. You know, he was always a pretty decent running back with Philly, and I thought breaking free and being the every down guy, he'd be solid. Nope. 129 carries, 432 yards, 3.3 average, one touchdown on the year rushing. Absolute pathetic. This dude was fucking trash. Chuba Hubbard was 10 times better, which is hilarious because he wasn't, but he had 902 rush yards. He ended up being the number one guy. More than doubled Miles Sanders' fantasy doc, and Sanders was like a fourth, fifth round pick. I had him in a lot of leagues, and one of the best balls I know, he was like an eighth round pick. So had him in almost all those, and that absolutely killed me. Not someone that I'm investing in. I'm avoiding this backfield without a doubt. Quick side note, Raheem Blackshear and Mike Boone are there as well. Spencer Brown, whoever that is. No points last year, but other bodies that are there. Wide receiver, I did have a few darts on Jonathan Mingo in best ball. Thought, you know, if someone's going to break out, maybe him. They had DJ Chark, Terrace Marshall, who I've been waiting to break out and still has not. Mike Strachan, LaVisca Chenault, and of course Adam Thielen, the ghost of Adam Thielen, who came out and finished as like a wide receiver three out of nowhere. Very consistent early on this season. He had 2, 16, 28, 11, 24, 15, then he had the bye, and then after that he was three games over 10, weeks 8 through 18, three double-digit weeks. Someone a lot of people were buying into. I knew it was a fad. He ended up falling into oblivion, which is great. Will be interesting to see what they do next year. I think if anything, Jonathan Mingo has to start breaking out. Maybe Terrace Marshall. They do have Deontay Johnson now from Pittsburgh. Good luck there, buddy. But, you know, really nothing that I want from this team whatsoever. I don't think in any way, shape, or form I can invest in the Panthers. All right, final notes I have here is position, just quick notes. QB this year, I really started to draft QB early. Again, I've always hated that. I've always drafted QB late. There are good guys. However, you cannot mess up. If you draft someone in the 8 through 12 range and they finish at quarterback 18, you're dead. You are dead because of how important a position is. I think it is reasonable and a good option to draft, even with the questions, Buffalo Bills, even Philly, Ravens quarterback hurts my soul. But, you know, quarterbacks up there, you know, are going to be great. I think those are the guys you want to build your team around. You don't have to draft them early. There are plenty of other guys that came out of the woodworks this year. Dallas, the 49ers QB, Vikings, Packers, Texans. You know, these are QBs that nobody had in the top six, and they ended up being, you know, top eight guys. Chargers, Bengals, Chiefs QB, Dolphins QB, maybe Bears QB. Like, these are positions that these are people that should do better, I think, in 2024 than they did in 2023. I don't think you have to invest early, but I think it's also a wise move if you do. And as much as I don't want to draft two QBs, it's not a bad idea to have two, and then you just cut bait as soon as you kind of figure out what's going on early. But I think I am going to continue with the elite early strategy entering next year. Running back, I kind of did Hua running back a lot, take one in the first two rounds, and then just kind of peg it late. Running back is so fallen off. It's basically the new tight end in the NFL. Most leagues you need to have two. I do not recommend using a tight end, or sorry, a running back in the flex ever unless you absolutely have to. The way I'm going to invest in it, though, is not necessarily hero running back, not necessarily no running back. I am literally just going to find the systems I like, hopefully that feed one guy or just fantastic like Cleveland, and then just pound. I think that's the way to go. Jerome Ford was solid. He wasn't Nick Chubb, but he was solid even when Chubb was out. That's just kind of what you have to do, and you just got to hope and pray you find the right one. That's why Kyron Williams was good. That's why CMC has been good. Great systems. Just got to find the right guy and find the right system, specifically the right system. Wide receiver, just hammer it. Early and often should be your first-round pick, probably your second-round pick, maybe your third-round pick. You should have three in the first five. Obvious. You cannot miss it, wide receiver. You need to pepper it early and often, and if someone goes down, which seems to be happening more and more every year, you just need to have backup options there. Finally, at tight end, I've talked about a number of times, and I think that the age of no tight ends is kind of gone. You can't do Kelce or bust in the first round. I think there's a number of solid guys out there. I think I'm going to avoid guys like Laporta, who had a really good rookie season. I'm going to be like a top two tight end, top three tight end. He's going to be number one. There's just too many tight ends. I don't think you need to draft him in the first five rounds. Just take whoever, and I'm still going to avoid rookies. Defense, you don't take defenses. And I think that's it. Here we are, an hour and 40-minute podcast by myself. So hopefully it helped somebody, specifically me, even though I feel like the information on this one was dog shit compared to the first one. Thanks, Clock. Hopefully you're listening and feel guilty. But anyway, as we wrap it up here, reminding everyone to follow us at Our Wagers on Twitter, where we don't post any content. Also, reminder that if you or someone you know has a gambling problem, please text or call 1-800-GAMBLER. Understand that it can be very serious and becoming more and more prevalent in today's society. And Clock will be here to close us out, but thank you for listening to us and remind all of you that we are winning our wagers, and we are here to help you win yours.